So what is this word, eschatology? It comes from the Greek ekatos, which means last, and logos, which means word. And it's the study of the end times. It's the answer to the question, where are we going? What is the purpose of existence? What is the horizon to which our lives are oriented? The question about the future is also a question about human nature. Because what you believe about the nature of humans determines what you believe about the future. And what you believe about the future affects how you act in the present. Now, most religions, maybe even all religions, have an eschatology, a determination of the culmination of everything, the end times. For some, it is the literal focus of their religion, like those people that seem to have enough money for billboards to tell you that the world is ending on May 17th at 5 p.m. It's the focus of their religion. Most of us are familiar with Christian eschatology, expressed mostly in the book of Revelations in the Christian scriptures, but other scriptures have some eschatological, future-oriented tones as well. There's also a lot of popular forms of Christian eschatology that abound. You don't have to read the book of Revelation to know that it tells us that the end of the world will come in a cosmic battle between good and evil, and that Jesus will return to rescue the true believers, and that all will be reunited to rule forever and ever in happiness. Popular versions of this eschatology come in the book The Left Behind series of novels, which were extremely popular about 10 years ago. But of course, who will be left behind determines on who you talk to and what your religious orientation is. In the Christian heaven of Revelations, only the righteous have a place. I think the essential question when thinking about eschatology is the future determined by human action, or is it predetermined by God and God's word? If you believe that God has predetermined everything that has happened, why care about the world now? Unitarian Universalist eschatology, which is a very well-developed eschatology, is very much on the side of humans determining the future. The roots of our eschatology are part of what define us as Unitarian Universalists. We were always the progressives, the liberal thinkers, the looking ahead to the next thing, to changing ourselves in response to the world. This defines who we are. And it goes back to the early 19th century when William Ellery Channing defined Unitarianism in this country and defined a very important quality of what makes us human and humans' relation to the divine. At the time, in the late 18th, early 19th century, Calvinism was prevalent in this country, and the Calvinist's basic tenet was that humans were depraved, and only God knew whether you were determined to go to heaven or hell. This was the world in which Channing came up, but he developed another approach that he called likeness to God. Delivered in a very important sermon during his era, he believed that humans were not only inherently good, but that we had the capacity to develop and evolve, to become more like God, to become more connected to God. We needed to strive for self-improvement. He didn't think that humans didn't have the capacity for evil, but he did believe and preached that humans had the capacity to grow and change and evolve. Normal thinking now, by the self-help books that you find in any bookstore that you go to, but a very radical idea at the time. But Unitarians didn't just talk about the goodness of humans, but they had this vision, the possibility of a better future. It was Theodore Parker, a Unitarian minister, who said, "The arc of the universe is long. I can't see where it's headed, but I believe that it bends towards justice." An eschatological thought, if there ever was one. The hymn that we sang, "Not in Vain the Distance Beacons," captures so much of that spirit of believing in a world of peace and connection. There's a section in our hymnal called "In Time to Come," and that particular hymn is in it, along with many others that speak of this belief in a good future for humans. "Wonder shall the still the world shall witness, and soon the day will arrive," fit in that section. Now, the Universalists, in their early development, were focused on the idea of God being a loving God, providing universal salvation. But with the turn of the 20th century, their worldview expanded, and the idea of universal salvation became a vision of a world made whole. Clarence Skinner was the standard bearer for the Universalist message of world peace at that time, and he wrote their Declaration of Social Principles in 1917, which said, "We declare for the democratization of industry and of land, and for the establishment of cooperation. We therefore pledge ourselves to work for the organization and federation of the world, that peace may be secured at the earliest possible date, consistent with justice for all." Now, two world wars put a bit of a dent in that sense of optimism, but Christopher captured really well in his reflection that spirit and energy after the Second World War, the time when the Unitarians and the Universalists merged. 1961, we developed our first set of principles, and the fourth principle, now revised in our revised version to the sixth principle, was to implement our vision of one world by striving for a world community founded on the ideals of brotherhood, justice, and peace. This now, of course, is our sixth principle, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. So, into this same era, the era of the 60s, here comes Captain Kirk. It's important to think of it in the context in which it arrived. There were a lot of challenging things happening in that decade, but there was also a lot of hope, prosperity, a sense of what was possible, civil rights, the beginning of feminism. Think of the people on the first Enterprise. You had Uhura, the communications officer, the first black person on TV who was not a servant. You had Chekhov, a Russian at the time when the Cold War was at its height. The Star Trek of the 60s projected out into a future where not only the planet was united, but the planets were united. So what's your favorite episode from that first series? Tribbles. One of mine was the half black, half white, where some people were black on the right and white on the left, and they hated each other. The people that were black on the white hated the people that were white on the right. As I was working on this sermon, I kept having these moments of, we've come a long way, right? What Star Trek gives us is this vision of the future where humans have resolved much of our conflict. And we have evolved to where we can focus on peace, progress, and exploration. But really, at the heart of this Star Trek vision is the Federation of Planets. And to capture the Federation of Planets, I turn to one of our sacred scriptures, Wikipedia. The Federation of Planets is a fictional interstellar federal republic composed of planetary sovereignties depicted in the Star Trek series. The planetary governments agree to exist semi-autonomously under a single central authority based on utopian principles of liberty, rights, and equality. and to share their knowledge and resources in peaceful cooperation and space exploration. Wow. Gene Roddenberry had a very big dream, had a very big vision, and he had the chutzpah to put it on TV in the 1960s. He took those ideas of our hymn, Wonders of the World Shall Witness, and expanded them to the galaxy. Now, the Federation was fully formed by the time we saw Captain Kirk in that first episode. In fact, the United Federation of Planets was established in 2160, just 150 years from now. But in order to know this history, you have to go to the show Enterprise. And I want to tell you, in service of this community, I watched 8 hours of the TV show Enterprise. In that series, you understand how we achieved this dream of the Federation of Planets. So as the story goes, in the years leading up to the founding of the Federation, members of several planetary species met to lay the groundwork for this global cooperation. Oh, actually, galaxy cooperation. I'm limiting my view here too much. However, around the time that the possibility of this Federation happened, a vicious new species, just like Star Trek always does, shows up and kills 7 million people on Earth to make a point that they can. And, of course, Captain Archer, the captain of the first Enterprise, takes care of it all, saves it all through, you know, amazing, wonderful, creative chutzpah. But what happens is that the people on Earth don't want to have anything to do with aliens anymore. And a group called Terra Prime rises up, Terra Prime being the primacy of humans, and threaten to blow up the Starfleet headquarters at the Presidio in San Francisco if all the aliens don't leave Earth. Now, I believe if they could have built shields, aka a wall, to keep out those aliens, they would have done so. The show's producer chose this as the lead-up to the establishment of the Federation because he believed that xenophobia was the final element of human nature that must be defeated before world peace or galaxy peace and cooperation could be achieved. Now, these Star Trek shows evolved as we evolved. We see this in the Prime Directive. It's the Prime Directive of Star Trek is the non-interference in the development of primitive cultures. There's a lot more respect given in the later series for the Prime Directive than there is in the first series with Kirk. You won't be surprised to find that many UU ministers have preached on Star Trek over the years. And I want to read just a little bit from my colleague Amy Morgenstern because she speaks about the Prime Directive. In Star Trek The Next Generation, when first exploring a planet to discover whether it was ready for first contact with people from another world, the crew went to tremendous lengths to remain undercover. They often grappled with the moral dilemma of wanting to save a planet from great suffering, but being unable to do so without interfering in its natural development. They took seriously the position implied by the Prime Directive that we simply do not know what is best for others, and that our paternalism can be destructive itself. Not surprisingly, where Captain Kirk from the original series was a cowboy, and let's face it, a playboy, Captain Picard was a brilliant diplomat, a compassionate negotiator, and a forger of creative compromise. We can only hope that the spirit of the Prime Directive can lead us into the future. I am inspired by the people of Star Trek. The captains Archer, Kirk, Picard, Janeway, Sisko all represented different personalities, but reflect something of the best of humanity. Humans rising to challenges while staying grounded in their principles. Part of the power of Star Trek is that they never stopped striving, striving for their vision of the way they believed the galaxy could be. And this power can inspire us now in the 21st century. It is the power of imagination and vision, believing that we can grow as individuals and grow as a civilization into what being human can be, to the best that we can possibly be. Star Trek inspires us to higher principles. It gives us the pleasure of rooting for the guy who really is trying to do the right thing. Not with the best weapon, but with the most creative solution. Being anchored in goodness and care and thoughts for the world community. The energy of Star Trek is active, exploring, engaging, not waiting for destiny to find them, taking their optimism and believing in the best future possible. It's no surprise that many Unitarian Universalists are Star Trek fans, for our eschatology is truly the same. The goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, whether it's the United Nations or the United Federation of Planets. A young man at the Oak Ridge, Tennessee church said, "I think the seven principles are a set of utopian principles. They are a foundation upon which to build a perfect society. I don't think of this as an unattainable goal. I think as long as we can envision something, we can find a way to attain it." So where do you stand in regards to the future? Do we humans have what it takes to build this world that we vision? For what you believe about the nature of humanity determines what you believe about the future. And what you believe about the future determines how you will function now in the present. May you find inspiration in whatever Star Trek series speaks to you, whatever captain calls you to your better self. And may we take our principles out there into this world and live them into the future that we dream about. So may it be. Blessed be.